Okay. All right, so let me start by thanking the organizers for inviting me here. It's always great to be here at KITP and for also allowing me to talk. So today I want to tell you about symmetry constraints far from equilibrium, and I'll define what I mean in a second. And before I go further, let me just acknowledge my collaborators, Andrew Porter at UC Austin. So I'm mostly going to talk about this paper with Andrew. And I'm also going to mention some older results with Sid, who's part of the workshop but not here today, at UC Irvine, and his student, Aaron Friedman, who's in the audience. So if you want to know more, I'm going to talk about those two papers, but the main result will be the first one over there. Okay, so what do I mean by symmetry constraints far from equilibrium? So in a nutshell, the goal of this talk is if you want to understand the role of symmetries, to infer, if you want, the fate of non-equilibrium many-body quantum systems in general. Okay. So of course I won't have like a perfect answer to that question, but that's the goal. Okay. And so this will mostly be a talk about many-body localization, but I'll try to be kind of more general and try to tell you about how you can use symmetry to say some things about general questions about thermalization, about dynamics, or about, say, even driven of Locke systems, for example. Okay. So let me start with some motivations to try to put this talk in the context of this workshop. The main motivation is kind of obvious in some way. I think we can all agree that symmetries play like a fundamental role in modern physics in general, and in particular in condensed matter physics. And symmetries are really crucial in our understanding of physics of matter in general. Okay. So let me call this maybe symmetry plus statmec in general. And so the crucial point for me is that this will be equilibrium physics. Okay. So what do I mean? Of course, I mean we have lambda theory of phase transitions. We have universality classes. And we have very powerful theorems in equilibrium, like Mermin-Wagner, for example, that rely on symmetry. And by Mermin-Wagner, I mean, you know, I include Perls-type arguments and things like this, okay? And so, I mean, we're all, of course, very used to all those concepts, but it's kind of amazing. In principle, you just give yourself some dimensionality and some symmetry properties, and you can already say a lot. You can understand which phases are allowed, what type of phase transition you can have, and you can already learn about, you know, universal phenomena and universality classes and critical exponents. And of course, more recently, we have everything that goes kind of beyond Landau, and where symmetries also play a crucial role, like topological insulators, and more generally, symmetry protected topological phases or symmetry enriched topological order, etc. I'll come back to some of those things later in the talk. And so for all those things, symmetry has really played like a crucial role in our understanding of those, of, you know, the classification of those phases of matter, if you want. Okay. And so just based on symmetry, you can already have a lot of information. And so and everything, of course, here is within the framework of equilibrium statistical mechanics. Okay. And so a rather obvious question is whether we can have something similar but not in thermal equilibrium. Okay. So what about far from equilibrium? Okay, so that's the main question I want to address here in this talk. So
can you define far?
Yes. Give me a second, and I'll. Something which is not. I don't want linear response. I want like some steady states that's very far from statistical mechanics. That's what I mean by far. I don't mean like an equilibrium system that you slightly perturb. I mean something which is definitely not described by statistical mechanics. But I'll give some examples. So let me come to the typical setup I'll have in mind, which is pretty much the generic setup that people have in mind in this workshop. I imagine I have some synthetic matter. So think of, I don't know, cold atoms or trapped ions or something like this. And I have a bunch of degrees of freedom. I think of them as being, say, qubits. And let me imagine, for example, that my system is isolated, and I have some type of global quench, and I perform some unitary evolution, so I shake my system at start-out high energy density, and kind of the main question is what happens there. And alternatively, we can also think of maybe driven systems or flow-case systems, and ask the same type of questions. Okay. And again, the question will be, can symmetry help? Okay. Can symmetry help in that question? So we've heard already, there's kind of two generic scenarios that we know of for that question. The first scenario is the scenario of thermalization, which is kind of the natural one. If you have a many-body quantum system that's kind of generic, that's what you would naturally expect. And, you know, well, I won't go through all the details, and let me call this ergodic. You have transports. The most important point for me is you have statmec that works. So you have no local memory of your initial condition, even though you have unitary dynamics. At least locally, you forget about your initial condition. This allows you to have a nice statmec description, okay? And so if you look at some reduced density matrix in that system, it's going to look thermal with some effective temperature. And in terms of entanglement, this means the entanglement entropy will scale as a volume norm. So that's something we've heard many times already just this week. And I'm sure people mentioned this also last week. All right. And so on the other side, we've also heard about another possible scenario, which would be many-body localization, which is a generic exception to this thermalization scenario. And okay, I'll come back to how you'd actually define many-body localization. But the most important point for me, as you do remember your initial condition, there's no statistical mechanics. There's many properties, and of course, many people worked on this. And one important property that we'll use is you have Ariello scaling of entanglement that was pointed out first by Bela Bauer and Chetan Nayak. All right. And so one question you can ask, of course, is, OK, can we say anything about this question just based on symmetry? So I don't want to like have a specific model. I don't want to write down a Hamiltonian. I just want to consider symmetries in general and decide maybe if we can say something about this. So ultimately, maybe a goal would be to say you have a system that has this symmetry. And maybe we can say, okay, for sure, you know, it will thermalize, for example. Okay, and try to see if we have something that goes, you know, something that would be similar in spirit to Mermin-Wagner type constraints, but that will apply to that type of question. Okay, and try to see if we can have some kind of guiding principles. So that's one goal, and so you can ask yourself if you don't thermalize and if you're say, in that world of many-body localization. So I should say this kind of one axis here, which you can think of disorder. Okay, so let's imagine you have a system that has strong disorder and maybe it has many-body localization. So you could think maybe because many-body localization doesn't satisfy statistical mechanics, maybe it's kind of boring in some way, and maybe it's just one big phase. But we know this is not true. They're basically, within the many-body localized phase, there's a whole zoo of phases. So this is related to something Sid talked about yesterday. So it's just that thing that people call localization-protected quantum order that was pointed out first by the group in Princeton, David Hughes, Shivaji, Sandi, and collaborators, including Arijit, and also by Bela Bauer and Chetan Nayak, and many people after that, is that even though you don't have statistical mechanics, you have a sharp notion of phase in those many-body localized systems. So you can have different flavors, if you want, on many-body localized phases. So if you want, there's a whole new world of phases that go beyond statmec. And the simplest way to understand this is that eigenstates, if you want, of many-body localized system look like ground states. They have area low entanglement, they look like quantum ground states. They can have properties of quantum ground states even when it's completely forbidden by statistical mechanics, even at high energy density. So for example, you can have symmetry breaking quantum order, you can have symmetry protected topological order, you can have topological order, all in situations where, you know, statistical mechanics would tell you this is not allowed. And so in particular, for example, Mermin-Wagner type constraints won't apply. Okay. So many-body localization doesn't care about statistical mechanics, and you can have really some type of order that would be completely forbidden by statistical mechanics. So for example, you can have some type of symmetry breaking in one dimension at high energy density. Okay.
And then what about ordinary Anderson localization?
Yes, they can also, but it's maybe less surprising. I mean, the important point here is that many-body localization is really generic. So you can add, it's really like, they're really phases. You can add any type of perturbation you want, and they'll remain like a phase. Okay. Yes, Anderson localized phases can have that type of quantum order. Yeah.
And then in this theory, there is a transition from to the conducting phase. Mm-hmm. Is it clear that the conducting phase thermalizes?
This is controversial. I'm not going to talk at all about the transition here. Yeah, there's some, okay, we can maybe talk about this privately afterwards. No, there's some controversy whether you go straight to thermal or you could go to something that's delocalized but non-thermal. Let me not go there today. But I'm happy to talk about this. There's another question? No. Okay. Okay, so there's basically a whole new zoo of phases. They don't satisfy Mermin-Wagner, and I guess the main question is there something that replaces Mermin-Wagner? Okay, and then in particular, can we classify classify those phases? Okay, can we say anything? We love classifications in equilibrium physics. Can we classify the type of phases we can have? Right, if we have say many-body localization, can we decide, for example, you know, maybe if I take like a phase I'm excited about, like a topological insulator, can we decide, you know, maybe we can have it at high energy density with many-body localization, and that would be kind of cool because you won't need to cool down your system to have, for example, this topological physics, right? And so topological insulators are one question, for example. So let me just put it there. Now I'll come back to this. Or more generally, take your favorite, I don't know, topological phase, symmetry protected topological phase, and we decide if we can protect it with many-body localization, and that works also, for example, in flow case systems. Okay. And once again, I want to see whether we can say anything about that question without being super specific about, you know, the model we want to work with and just focus on symmetry. Okay. So that's kind of the general goal of this talk. And like I said, this is obviously like a broad question, so I won't claim I have a definite answer to all of this. But I'll give you an example of a strong constraint we can have that will allow us to answer at least some of those questions based purely on symmetry. Okay. So let me just, so we clearly give you like a brief outline of what I want to talk about. So I'm going to start by giving you a simple example. So I said I wanted to focus on symmetry and not write down a Hamiltonian. I'm actually going to write down a Hamiltonian of just a simple model where at least we can all understand and all see that adding some symmetries can completely change the fate of, say, thermalization. And even at the free fermion level, we can see something interesting. So this will be the case of particle hole symmetry. And I'll just give you the model and say what we find. I won't go into the details. And then I'll give you a general argument that, in a nutshell, forbids many-body localization when you have non-abelian symmetries. And you'll see that will have pretty dramatic consequences, in particular for those questions. Okay. And so if I have time in the end, I'll comment a bit on, like I said, this question of classification of phases or flow case phases. All right, so let me start with, like I said, with a simple example before I give you like a general argument. And the simple example is the example of particle hole symmetry that I'm going to abbreviate as PHA. So I want like a simple model, not go into the details, and see these effects of thermalization. So if you follow a bit this field of many-body localization, you probably notice that, first of all, almost everyone works in 1D. Okay, this is not always true, but almost. And one model that people love to study numerically is the X-axis fin chain. And pretty much 95% of the papers are studying that model. So let me just write down the Hamiltonian. So it's a 1D system. I mean, you can put randomness or not here. Right, so it's an interacting many-body quantum system, and usually people put some random field. So this corresponds to spin, if you perform a Jordan-Vigneur transformation, this corresponds to spinless fermions with some random chemical potential, but you added some interaction term. Okay, so it's kind of a natural model to consider. And so since I'll be interested in symmetries, so this model has an obviously has some U1 symmetry, which is LC conservation, or particle number conservation in the fermionic language. Okay, so let me do something simple, and let me imagine and remove that term. So I don't want random fields, but I still have random couplings. Okay, I have random hoppings and random interactions. I make all the couplings random. So that seems a bit benign in some way, like I didn't do much. Well, I still have disorder. The main difference is I have an extra symmetry when I do this. If I don't have that term, I have a symmetry which is some type of Ising symmetry, which is just flip all spins. Okay, so it's a Z2 symmetry. So it's an Ising symmetry. And if you think in terms of fermions, so if you perform a Jordan-Vigneur, this symmetry is precisely particle hole conjugation. Okay, so you map C to a C dagger. So you just flip the spins, right? So this is a symmetry of my Hamiltonian. If I had those random fields, this would not be a symmetry, obviously. But if I don't have those fields, this is a symmetry. And so my full symmetry group is a combination of those two things. And you can easily convince yourself that those two symmetries don't commute, which is why I put this semi-direct symbol. So don't worry too much about that symbol. The important point is that those two symmetries don't commute. And the reason is kind of clear. This Z2 exchanges representation of U1. Right? So for example, if you have some representation of spin 1, you'll map it to spin minus 1 with this. Right? So you exchange the sign of the spin, so you mix it, you mix the representation of this U1 symmetry. All right. Okay, so that seems really nice. So I changed a bit my symmetry. And so originally, we thought about that problem for completely different reasons. And okay, we had motivation that were related precisely to this particle hole symmetry, but this model is kind of weird, and it's kind of special for the following reasons. And so one easy way to do this is to think about just the non-interacting model, which is just Anderson insulator. Okay. So the non-interacting model is kind of already kind of peculiar. So it was studied by many people using either strong disorder renormalization group, by Daniel Fisher in particular, or you can use it, since it's a free fermion problem, you can also use nice techniques like supersymmetry. There's really a beautiful paper by people here, Matthew Fisher and Leon Balance on this. So there's several ways to deal with that problem, but you can basically understand everything exactly. And so already one peculiar property is that if you think of the ground state is not like a typical Anderson insulator. It is one of those so-called random singlet phases. And the only thing important for me is that this will have critical-like properties. So for example, if you look at the entanglement, it will scale like log L. So it won't be like a usual Arielle entanglement. So there's already a bit something special here. Another special feature is that if you diagonalize your Hamiltonian, so okay, I have three fermions, so let me imagine I can diagonalize it. Just because of this particle hole symmetry, there's an obvious symmetry that those energies, single particle energies, have to satisfy. I have to have a symmetry where I flip the sign of those single particle energies. Okay. So what it means is that if I plot my single particle energies and I have zero, so if I have a single energy epsilon 1, I have minus epsilon 1, and so on. So of course, in a ground state, you just occupy all the negative energy levels. But in random in typical excited states, you would just put some particles over there, right? And so you see that something kind of special will happen, actually. Because you have this exact symmetry, you have many ways to get the same energy. So in other words, you'll have huge degeneracies in your eigenstates. And so, for example, let me imagine I occupy those two orbitals. Okay. So the total energies that I have a minus epsilon 1 and an epsilon 1, so they cancel. Okay. And I could as well occupy epsilon 2 and minus epsilon 2, and again, they would cancel. Okay. And so you see, for example, you have an exponential number of ways in a system size to have energy zero, for example. Okay, because I can occupy those two, I can occupy those two, and I can do this for pretty much all orbitals. Or if I have like a complicated eigenstate where I occupy some of those, I can take those two particles and for example, just move them to the next orbitals, and I won't change the many body energy. Okay? Does that make sense? So this is just a very simple consequence of that symmetry of the spectrum. And so what this means is that if you think of many-body eigenstates, which is what you want to think about when you think of, say, many-body localization, you have an exponential degeneracies. By exponential, I mean exponential in the system size of eigenstates. So of course, you have some eigenstates that are non-degenerate, but there's actually only a vanishing fraction of them. So for example, the ground state is non-degenerate. You have a unique ground state. But if you think of typical eigenstates in the middle of the spectrum, you can really easily see that they'll have exponential degeneracy in system size. Okay, and actually, this property also leads to some interesting property of the single particle localization length. So this single particle localization length diverges at the band center, which is, again, a property of that particle hole symmetry. So you have a delocalized mode in that model. So this is not your typical Anderson insulator. And of course, everything I'm saying is extremely well understood. So this diverges logarithmically or there might be a square, depending if you want to think of typical and average. But this doesn't really matter. OK, so this is a non-interacting problem. And like I said, this is really well understood. And so now the question is, let's turn on interactions and think of the non-equilibrium dynamics of that system. So imagine doing precisely this setup. I think of a quantum quench at, say, high energy density. And I want to understand what happens. Do I thermalize? Do I have something that looks like a many-body localization? Do I have Arriano scaling of entanglement in eigenstates? What happens? And you see it's kind of, you can already see that something has to happen. Something kind of weird has to happen. You have those exponential degeneracies, which cannot really be generic. And naturally, you would expect when you turn on interactions, you'll lift those degeneracies. And so those degeneracies are just due to that rather an innocent-looking Z2. Okay, I just added some symmetry, and this led to all those degeneracies. So is the question clear? I just want to take exactly that same model, add interactions, and ask about eigenstates, or more generally, maybe about dynamics. Okay. And so intuitively, you would expect that when you add interactions to that model, you'll lift those degeneracies first. But maybe you could worry that, since already your single particle spectrum isn't exactly localized, you have like a delocalized mode, maybe something kind of bad will happen when you turn on interactions. Okay? Usual MBL people start from perfectly localized single particle orbitals, and then you add disorder. Here already your single particle spectrum is kind of weird, so you could worry about that. And again, the ground state has those quantum critical properties, so maybe you could worry, well, you could think you have similar things in eigenstates.
You said this is a symmetry that's generating this.
Yes.
And then you're going to add interactions which keep that symmetry?
Yes.
But that's going to lift? I guess I didn't follow.
Okay. Yes. So this symmetry will protect some degeneracies. Okay. So clearly, for example, let's take two-spin. Okay. So let's diagonalize the two-spin problem. So it's trivial. I have, say, just a singlet. I have two degenerate states up, up, and down, down. And I have like a FZ equals zero triplet, if you want. Okay, so the fact that those two guys have the same energy is precisely because of that symmetry, for example. The fact that I have this exponential degeneracy, which is pretty strange, is because this is a free fermion problem. Okay, and localized. So for that localized free fermion problem, that symmetry leads to this massive degeneracy of eigenstates.
That's an accident. Accident of being in the curve.
Yeah, I mean, you'll see that the pretty much the main point of the talk is that, okay, it's an accident, but basically if you trust many-body localization, and if you have that type of symmetry, you'll have the same type of huge degeneracies. So I'll come to that. So it is an accident if you want, but it's a really a property of being localized. If you have those symmetries and you're localized, you'll have those huge degeneracies. And that's kind of what I will use. I'll get to this. But this is not, of course, generic of many body quantum systems. Usually, I mean, this is not, if you take that model generically with interactions or clean couplings, that you don't have those huge degeneracies. This is definitely something of the single particle problem.
So the real degeneracy of the states become exponentially closed in the number of the power particles.
No, this is exact. This is exact on a finite system, right? Like this is not, you know, degenerating system size. This is exact on any, you could take 10 sites, diagonal. If you want, you'll have those exact degeneracies.
And that's a property of the many-body localization compared to Anderson localization.
I mean, so far this was just non-interacting. So this is Anderson, this is an Anderson localized, this is an Anderson insulator, right? This is non-interacting, I have delta I equals zero. So it's just random.
No, but
there are many of them. Oh yeah, sure. I put particle. Yeah, yes. But this is a non-interacting problem. So let me just tell you what happened. So I won't tell you how we did this. Let me take this as a numerical evidence, if you want, and then I'll go to the argument. So let me just say that the tools. So let me imagine that we do just numerics. So I should say that this is the type of question we answered using numerics, but we knew the answer beforehand. Like sometimes people think of MBL as being a purely numerical field. So in that case, we're also using some renormalization group type approaches at Song disorder, so we already knew kind of what the answer would be. But anyway, let me take this as, you know, numerical evidence, just take this model, try to do exact diagonalization and see what happens. Do we get many body localization, for example, in that model? Okay, so let me just two axes. So I have disorder here and interactions. There. Okay, and I want to do that type of, you know, quantum quench I was doing and type of phases I have. So if you have weak disorder and you add interactions, you naturally expect somewhere you'll have like a thermal phase or some ergodic phase that will satisfy the eigenstate thermalization hypothesis. So that's kind of natural. What we find numerically is that, so that is numerics, the theory was at Strong disorder. It seems that there's really like a line here that seems to approach at some point, even though there's nothing going on in that, the free fermion model at that point. So but let me not think too much about this. At Strong disorder, when you add interactions, there seems to be a many-body localized phase. Okay, fine. But something weird happens. So in that many-body localized phase, the symmetry Z2 is spontaneously broken. So let me call this spontaneous symmetry breaking. So if you want, this is like a type of spin glass phase that, again, Sid was mentioning yesterday. And so what this means is that if you want, you'll have a many-body localized phase. It will have usual properties. So for example, so you're in 1D, so in the entanglement will scale to a constant and so on. But each eigenstate individually will break that Z2 symmetry. That looked rather innocent. Okay. So of course, on a finite size system, what I mean is that your eigenstate will be cat states. You know, usual thing that happens when you have symmetry breaking. The only difference is that will happen in all eigenstates now. Okay. So you can easily see this numerically. You really literally see cat states disappearing. You know, everything you can measure some order parameter, and you can see that symmetry is broken. All right. And so, like I said, we knew this from some renormalization group. So this is extremely weird. So if you're, okay, not used to many-body localization, this is probably maybe not weird to you. Let me tell you why this is really weird to me. So there's two things. It seems that you go through two transitions at once here. So you go from something that's, you know, ergodic to something that's many-body localized, but at the same time you break a symmetry somehow out of nowhere, and you don't know really why. Okay. The other weird thing, and that's the most important point, there's no symmetry preserving MBL phase. Okay. So here, I mean, in non-interacting case, all my eigenstates respected that. I had those huge degeneracies, but all the eigenstates respected nicely that symmetry. There, somehow, I get many-body localization, but I lose my symmetry. So essentially, this, you know, this phase looks exactly like the phase that people get when they put random fields. The eigenstates look exactly the same. There's nothing different. So you thought you could do something different, but at the end of the day, you just have a U1 symmetry here, and you're back to the usual case. But that happens somehow dynamically, if you want, right? Because I put a larger symmetry in, and at the end of the day, I don't have my symmetry back. So this, we're a bit puzzled by this, but this suggests something interesting. This suggests that many-body localization doesn't like some type of symmetries. Okay? So if you want, that's one way to see it. Many-body localization didn't like my symmetry group and decided that, you know, it could be realized, but by breaking the symmetry back to this nice U1 that everyone studies. So now let me tell you why. So let's take this as, if you want, you know, numerical evidence, some kind of input to guide us. So one important point here that I should also mention is that you see you all have some type of problems related to some of the questions I was asking. I was asking about what type of phases we can realize. It seems in that model there's one phase, for example, we cannot realize. Seems that we cannot realize a many-body localized phase that had the original symmetry. If you want, I don't have any many-body localized paramagnet in that model. Yes?
Does this consequently rely on both symmetry, U1 and V2? Or it relies on the V2 symmetry? For example, if you break U1 symmetry.
Yeah. No, if you break the U1, you could have the V2. The important point, so that will be the main point and the main point of the rest of the talk, is that that symmetry group was non-abelian. Okay, so that will be the crucial point. Yes?
So it doesn't matter, is it looking at the entire spectrum, or are you looking at a fixed SC spectrum?
Everything here, so let me focus on, okay, just because that symmetry group is a bit special, let me focus, of course, at S equals 0.
But if S is 0, then the Z2 symmetry commutes to the U1 symmetry.
Yes. Now, I mean, okay, if you fix an SD sector, you... Okay, yes. That's true. I mean, the overall group...
So if this sector with SD is 0, then you only have an abelian symmetry.
But that doesn't protect... Okay, so let me actually get to the argument. So that doesn't rule out the symmetries. You'll still have the degeneracies I want to talk about. So, I need the non-abelianness to have those degeneracies, and they will be there no matter what. The reason, if you fix an SD sector, you kind of already break the Z2 in some way, right? Like it's, so, I mean, the reason you do numerics in SD equals 0 is to kind of see...
Right, but what I'm saying is that if you fix SD is 0, you can also diagonalize the Z2 in that sector.
Yes, you can. And you'll see... So what you'll see is, of course, like it's, again, on finite size system, the Z2 symmetry is preserved, right? But you'll see cat states. So that's the usual thing, right? Like, so I will fix U1, I will fix the Z2 sector, sure. But then you can see you'll have, you know, cat states, and you will have almost the same energy as you increase the system size. So usual scenario, like you would do for symmetry breaking on finite size system for Ising in a ground state. The only difference is this happens in excited state. So yeah, sure, that's right, yeah. Okay, so let me come to the main result. And so the claim will be that... what did I do with my notes? So it seems you have some symmetries that are incompatible with MBL, okay? And so the claim will be some kind of no-go theorem, if you want, even though I'm not going to prove, you know, it. I won't want to claim this is a theorem because I'm not a mathematical physicist, but this is a no-go theorem, if you want. so there's some kind of no-go for many-body localization plus non-abelian symmetries. So if you want, the definition of MBL doesn't really allow for having non-abelian symmetries in general. And so by this, I mean many-body localized that preserve the symmetry. So let me just mention right now. So claim many-body localization is not compatible with non-abelian symmetries. And just so we're clear, by non-abelian symmetries, I mean anything that goes from a discrete group to a Lie group. Okay. So just to give you some examples, you could have a symmetry group, which is the permutation group. So that would give you, for example, like a box model. What I'm going to say will apply to that. Your symmetry group could be like a dihedral group, which a bit more formally is something like that. All those discrete groups will die by what I'm going to say. And of course, what I'm going to say will also work for Lie groups, like, for example, SU2. Okay, so that will maybe be the most important points for physically. If you take like an SU2 symmetry group, you cannot have normal many-body localization. And let me mention right away, I'm not going to discuss anti-unitary symmetries, but actually non-abelian is not, okay, non-abelian is important. What will really matter for me are symmetries that protect degeneracies. So for example, time reversal in the context of topological insulators, something that squares to -1 will protect Cramer's degeneracies, and that will count as non-abelian for me in some way. So I'll come back to this.
So what you're saying is there's no analog of many body localized quantums in the group. If you could have a many body localized anti-Feyermankian, which breaks the SU2 symmetry.
Okay, I'll come to this. So you can break some symmetries. There's other arguments. I'll come to that. Some symmetries you can break spontaneously in many body localized systems. SU2, there's some other arguments you don't want Goldstone modes. Okay, that's it. So some symmetries you can break nicely. Some of those discrete symmetries, you could get many-body localized phase by spontaneously breaking a symmetry. SU2, there's no proof of it, but most people believe there's no way you'll be able to break it spontaneously in many-body localized systems. There's some papers on this. So it goes back to older works by, say, Gohari and Choker, for example. And there was a nice paper by Andrew Potter and Raoul-Nansky show. There's no, at this point, I know complete formal proof, but pretty much everyone agrees that you won't be able to break them spontaneously. So in some cases, for example, SU2, I will argue that it seems that the only possible scenario, at least as we know of right now, is thermalization. Which would mean if you take a system with SU2 symmetry, it seems that your only option is to thermalize. Okay. So that's the type of results that seems kind of powerful, because now you can just take your system and say, oh, I have a spin symmetry, so that's it. At least in principle, I cannot get many-body localization.
Is this related to like local symmetry versus like global?
Yes. okay. So let me just give you the argument in a nutshell. The argument is physically kind of simple. In a localized system, if you have symmetries, you basically have blocks that almost don't talk to each other, like to zeroth order approximation, and they will transform independently under the symmetry. And if you're non-abelian, you'll have naturally degeneracies that will become local. So if you want your global symmetry, become local if you have a many-body localized system. And that will lead to huge degeneracies, very much like the ones we have there. And then I will argue that this won't be generic. If you want, it's a contradiction. If you assume symmetry in many-body localization, you get something that has exponential degeneracies of eigenstates. Okay. yes.
And how about approximate symmetries? If it is not entirely satisfied, but almost satisfied?
If it is, okay, so then I won't have a problem. I won't have anything very sharp to say.
Okay.
What I'm going to say will apply exactly when you have MBL and you have exact symmetries. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just want to clarify. I mean, so one possibility is not having MBL, the other is having MBL but spontaneously broken symmetry.
Yes. So
that's
okay.
Still in the realm.
Yes, it is. Good. Exactly. So that's exactly my next point. So before I give you the arguments, let me just tell you about physically what it means in the alternate scenarios, okay? Alternative scenarios. So let's imagine you have non-abelian symmetry. So I'm just telling you, you cannot have MBL. So what else can happen? So of course, one thing that can happen is, so one possibility is thermalization. So just so we're clear, thermalization is always an option, right? So I don't, this can always happen at weak disorder. In some cases, it seems unavoidable. So I'll come back to this. So in some cases, for example, SU2, or more generally non-abelian Lie group, it seems that there's no way to avoid this. In some other cases, it seems you can get MBL, but like you said, one possibility, you get MBL, but at the price of breaking the symmetry. Okay? So you have spontaneous symmetry breaking, where you break your symmetry down to an abelian subgroup. Okay? And there's some constraints on this based on, like I said, on Goldstone modes and so on. I won't really go into this. There's some additional possibilities, so at least for discrete groups, like SN, you know, dihedral group, it sounds possible. I mean, you could break this part and be back to some abelian subgroup. Okay? So let me break G to G prime, where G is abelian. And there's some additional constraints on whether this is possible for many body localization.
So excuse me, why is it not possible for SU2?
Goldstone modes. So yeah, in a nutshell. But like I said, there's no formal proof, but yeah, there's a really good argument why that won't work if you have Goldstone modes. Let me not go there, and I mean I'm happy to comment on this afterwards, but basically this will work only when you break nice discrete symmetries.
Could there still be a regime, I mean, where this thermalization, for example, in the SU2 case, happens extremely slow? I mean,
yes.
It would be extremely slow, and that, I mean, on any experimental relevant timescales, it will look like a perfect MBL system.
Yes.
So the question is how to.
That's a very good question. Yes. That is a very good question and a very relevant one. Unfortunately, so that I don't have an answer except on a case by case basis. And indeed, for SU2, it seems that the timescale could be very long if your disorder, extremely long if your disorder is strong enough. So this could be academic. It really depends on which symmetry class you look at. So I'm really going to, you know, this is like if you want like a no-go theorem, but there's a question of, you know, even if we don't have, strictly speaking, many body localization, maybe for reasonable timescales we'll see something that looks like localization. And after all, I mean, I guess you would agree we never have actual many body localization in the lab. There's always some coupling to a bath. There's always something that will destroy you, right? Like so then it's a matter of time scale. For SU2, I agree, it seems really, really long. And I'm not, of course, if you take a disordered system that has SU2 symmetry on like 20 sites, for example, and you crank up disorder like crazy, you're going to see something that looks like many body localization. So what I want to really argue is that this won't be stable in the thermodynamic limit.
This is a question of definition. So when you say thermalization, do you include those cases where people might call it marginal MBL?
Yes. Okay. No. This will come to the next point. So the last option here would be something that I'm going to call more exotic non-ergodic phases. And so what I'm going to include in there is everything I didn't include is what I mean by many body localization. Okay, so there's something obvious. I didn't give you a definition of what this is. And not everyone agrees on what the definition of what this is. And so once I fix a definition, I'm going to try to argue that there's a good definition, at least that most people will agree on. You could always have some more exotic non-ergodic phases, but they won't have the typical structure that people think of many-body localization. An example would be some phases that satisfy, for example, log n and Sangamon in 1D. So I'm not going to include this as many-body localization. I'm going to think of strict RELO as many-body localization. Yes?
I have a kind of tangent question, but is there any signature of like Griffiths-like behavior in that phase diagram because of the presence of disorder?
Yes. Do you mean related to spontaneous symmetry breaking? I mean, there's the usual Griffiths picture that you have when you go from thermal to non-thermal. You will have some diffusive transport and so on in that phase. There's probably also some Griffiths features associated with the symmetry breaking. I never thought too much about that. Here's a good question. Probably. I would think so, yeah. All right, so let me, you know, in the last 15 minutes of this talk, just give you, in a nutshell, what the argument is. and why this is true. And so basically, like I said, if I have non-abelian symmetry, one of those things will occur. Okay. So either you'll get that or you get something more exotic. And let me put a question mark down there, because there's no, I mean, at least there's no realization that I know of such a phase. Okay. So this slice point could just not exist. Okay.
Wouldn't the critical point between, I mean, in the Ising model, have that scaling?
Oh, yeah, okay, okay, but it's a point, it's not a phase. Okay. Yeah, sure, yeah, that's right. And there's also anionic chains that actually Sid talked about, but I don't know how to realize them in something that's not with anions. So, okay, yeah, clearly the anionic chains would be actually an example of those more exotic non-ergodic phases. But there's some questions, one regarding the stability, and two, whether you can actually realize similar things in spin chains, or in something that's exotic. Okay, so why is that true? So I first needed just a definition of what many-body localization is. And so going back to Jens's talk, we'll agree there's many facets to many-body localization. There's many ways people talk about it. There's many different signatures and, you know, dynamics, or in eigenstates, people talk about area low scaling of entanglements. There's really many ways to think about it. But there's one way that seems more fundamental, you know, than others, at least in my opinion. It's this concept of local integrability. And so this is work by Serbin, Babek and Dima Abanin and a few years back, and also by Hughes, Oganessian, and yeah, there was a paper with Raoul Shaw, Oganessian. Okay. And then there was this Western in an almost proof by Imbri. For at least a specific model. All right, so what is that local integrability picture? So that's pretty much, so the reason I want to talk about this is that this definition pretty much seems to imply all the other phenomena that people usually associate with many-body localization. This local integrability means you'll have emergent conserved quantities. So that's emergent quasi-local conserved quantities, and that seems to, you know, underlie the whole physics of many-body localized systems. And so in practice, how does that work? Let me consider like a simple model just to fix the ideas. Let's think of an Ising paramagnet. So it could be in any dimension. So let me imagine I have some Ising, okay, something I would call an Ising paramagnet, and then a bunch of terms. So it could be something that would look like an Ising model, and maybe even put other couplings, really to make everything generic. You can really add whatever you want as long as it respects the symmetry. And so I'm going to assume that this term is really large and all those are really weak. Okay, so of course I took that model because it already has some symmetry, which will make my life easier in a second. So it has this size of Z2 symmetry, which is obviously just an Ising symmetry. So what this local integrability means, if you want, is all the eigenstates are pretty much dressed sigma x product states. Okay. Or if you want, all the eigenstates are smoothly connected to the eigenstates of that very simple Hamiltonian. Okay, so that's really what many-body localization is. You start from something that is completely trivial. You just have like a, you know, trivial paramagnets, and then you smoothly deform them. You'll see what I mean by smoothly deforming in a second. You'll get all your eigenstates. So all of this is just going to dress this trivial paramagnet. Okay, so that's really, in a sense, what many-body localization is. And people introduce, so you have some dressed spins that people usually call L-bits, or local integrals of motions. And here I'm going to work with projectors. So I have this notation. So basically, you're just going to have projectors that are going to tell you if I'm this sigma x supporting up or down, and I'm just going to dress them by some quasi-local unitary. Okay. And so the claim is that those projectors are, well, commutes with the Hamiltonian, so they can label eigenstates, and they will commute with each other. So they're really independent concept quantities. And so you can think of those guys are really, if you want, dressed spins. Okay? So you have something around I, and I have my Kolchak quantity there called pi alpha I, which is a Kolchak quantity. It's roughly speaking just that projector that you weakly dressed in some way. Okay? So that's what many-body localization is. Yeah.
That picture really only holds deep in the MBL space. You know, I mean, close to the transition point where you would. I mean, it's is this picture true also?
It depends if you believe in the mobility yet also. So okay, I'm going to take this. So I was going to say that. So I'm going to take this as a definition of what many-body localization is. You can argue it's a strong definition, which indeed will work well in the, you know, this will mean pretty much the whole. This would mean the whole spectrum is localized. All my eigenstates, I can label all my eigenstates by those numbers. And indeed, we can discuss whether this, you know, this may restrict yourself. Actually, the argument, okay, if I take this definition, I can make the argument pretty much almost a proof. If you relax that argument, there's actually the general argument will most likely work also when you have like a looser definition of what many-body localization is in terms of Kolchak quantities. Yeah, okay, no, okay, I agree with the suggestion.
Can I ask a question on this?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I mean, wouldn't it be true that it would always be writable in this form, except that the coefficients would diverge in the real space lattice, right?
Yes, but some people believe you could have a many-body mobility edge. Yes.
In this picture, you don't need to take the thermodynamic limits.
No, I don't. All those guys are quasi-local, so I have to define precisely what that means when I have a finite. I mean, imagine I'm just, you know, increasing the size of the systems. We can discuss about L star bits maybe in private after if you want. If that's where you're going, okay. So those guys are quasi-local. Okay, so in the last 5 minutes, let me just sketch how the argument goes, just to give you an idea and comment on topological phases. So the main idea is, okay, let's imagine this is true, but now I'm going to take this as a definition, if you want. For any system, what I will mean by the fact that this many-body localized is that I can construct fine projectors. In general, those projectors are just, I can, so what I mean by those projectors is, this projector means that on this local constant quantity alpha, I'll choose the value n alpha. So n alpha will go from 1 to some value. And those projectors you can construct by basically just summing over eigenstates. All right, so you have those conserved quantities, and I'm just going to take this as a definition. Okay? I'm going to just assume this is the definition of what many-body localization is. And this implies pretty much the whole folklore of many-body localization once you have this. So what does that mean then? If you have this, you see that those guys are just local excitations, right? They're just local excitations of your system, so you expect them to transform nicely under the symmetry. Okay. And this is definitely the case. Those guys are, you see, for example, for Ising, those are just labeling irreducible representation of your symmetric group, okay? And so that will actually always be true. So if you want the pi and alpha, those projectors, they label ereps of your symmetric group that I'm going to call G. So that's the first point, and that's kind of clear for Ising. So what it means is your symmetry. And we have some formal argument that I won't go through here to kind of argue why this is true in general. that your Hilbert space, if you want, will have a nice tensor product structure over those L bits, and those are representation of the symmetry group. So they respect nicely the symmetry, and those representation, if you want to be a bit formal, you can decompose them into E-reps, and those projectors are projecting onto those guys. Okay, that's a bit formal, but just for Ising, for example, this representation is just a sum of something that's odd and even on the Z2, for example. Okay, so my projectors are just telling me whether I'm odd or even under this Z2 symmetry. So that's for Ising, for example. Okay, and so there's a claim that this is always true, and you can pretty much argue this rigorously, but let me not go there. And now let's imagine I have a non-abelian group. Okay. The point will be that generically some of those irreducible representations will have dimension more than one. Okay. So you need some argument if you want of faithfulness so that you just don't have like a trivial case. But you can always argue some of those representations will be multidimensional. Okay, so that's kind of naturally what will happen if you have a non-abelian symmetry. Another crucial point is that those L bits or projectors, they're just commuting projectors, right? So your Hamiltonian is only allowed to depend on those guys. And so if you have degeneracies, there's no way to lift them. So that'll be the crucial point. Once you assume something is an L bit, so this is a pretty strong definition, there's no way to lift those degeneracies. Once you have, basically those L bits will tell you which direction your effective spin is pointing. If you have any degeneracy left, there's no way to lift that degeneracy without either breaking the symmetry explicitly or basically breaking that picture of L bits. Okay. And so if you want, in other words, really your symmetry is factorizing nicely under your L bits. So if you make like a local excitation somewhere, this local excitation will transform in a nice representation of the symmetry. And if you make another local excitation somewhere else in your system far away, it will also transform nicely under the symmetry. But those will transform completely independently. So if you want, the combination of those two excitations will transform in a tensor product of the two representations. Okay. And if you have degeneracy, that's the way you will construct your eigenstates. And basically, if some of those guys have some degeneracies, that's it. They will just remain there. That's what actually happened for XX. And this tells you you have local degeneracies. And in other words, your global symmetry turned into a local symmetry. Okay. So that's another thing. So you started with a global symmetry G, and this became local somehow. And again, this is trivial in Ising. You started with a local symmetry, which was this guy, which commuted with your Hamiltonian. And then, if you have a many-body localized phase, you had like a local version of that symmetry that commutes with your Hamiltonian. So this is, of course, trivial for Ising because they coincide with the conserved quantities. But the claim is that this is general. This is always true, even if you have something non-abelian. So basically, you get some huge local symmetry if you're many-body localized. Okay. So that gives you local degeneracies. And if you have local degeneracies in a generic eigenstate, it means that you'll have exponential degeneracy. Okay. Again, just like XX. So in a generic eigenstate, you'll have exponential degeneracies. Okay, so you can formalize all this, take some representation that corresponds to some eigenstate, and you can show that the dimension of this representation will diverge exponentially in the system size. And the claim is that this is a contradiction, because that won't be generic. Okay, so at least we don't know of any many-body quantum system that will generically have exponential degeneracies, and that will certainly not be stable to thermalization. So at least the way you think about many-body localization, as localization in Fock space, there's no way that will be stable. Okay, so this is like a, you know, the proof in a nutshell, if you want. There's a way to formalize all this. But basically, if you want to prove by contradiction, if you assume a non-abelian symmetry and this out-bit picture, you get necessarily degenerate, exponentially degenerate eigenstates, which won't be true for a generic many-body quantum system. Okay, so that tells you you will either thermalize or you'll get something that won't have that nice out-bit picture. But in this case, there's a question of whether you want to actually call this many-body localization or whether this actually exists. And or you could break the symmetry, okay? And just, so I'm basically done. So let me just wrap up by mentioning that this result has really dramatic consequences when you want to think of the type of phases you can protect using many-body localization. And this comes back to, you know, my original question of whether we can have something like Mermin-Wagner. Because actually, non-abelian symmetries are all over the place, okay? Even discrete non-abelian symmetries are all over the place. And this is especially true if you want to think of symmetry-protected topological phases. Okay, and remember that I included time reversal t squared equals minus 1 as non-abelian in some way. I mean, it's abelian, but it's non-unitary. It will have local Cramer's degeneracies. You can generalize this to those. And I will basically have the same problem. And so this result, let me just be brief, and say that this result really rules out many symmetry-protected topological phases, including topological insulators. For example, they have t squared equals minus 1. Actually, you can take all the fermionic, all the periodic table, which also non-interacting system, add interactions, and you can see they're not, they cannot be many-body localized. So that's an example. So
I think for symmetry class BD1 is an exception, isn't it?
Okay, so yes, so I'm using other things for that. So things that have Majorana's, you can many-body localized. There's a question of, we have something that we call like a practical obstruction, which is how do you actually get Majorana's in a cold atom setup without having a Goldstone mode? You need a superfluid condensate and you need a Goldstone mode, so we need other arguments. So, okay, you're right. Majorana's are kind of special. All the other classes like topological insulators, something that will have particle symmetry, will be ruled out by that argument. And that works also for flow-case system, so that will be my last point. And that's especially important for flow-case system, so there's been a lot of excitement and really beautiful works by people here in Santa Barbara, people in Berkeley, people in Princeton, on classifying symmetry-protected topological phases with in flow-case driven systems, you know, what type of topological insulators you can have in flow-case systems. But then you have interactions and you have flow-case systems, and it seems that the only way to prevent, you know, thermalization to something, absorption of energy and thermalization to infinite temperature, is to actually have many-body localization. And again, this result will actually strongly constrain you, okay? Because many of the natural topological phases you could think of, especially fermionic topological phases, will have that problem, okay? So I'll stop there. Thank you for your attention.
Proof can hold for non-abelian models?
Well, I mean, if what I told you is true, no. Right. No, you'll have, I mean, what you'll see again, like if, you know, something like Imbri's proof would work for a non-abelian model, you would have those exponential degeneracies, which again won't be generic. I mean, you can definitely construct models for which you would have those non-exponential degeneracies. The XX chain was one example. You can definitely construct interacting version of that, like zero correlation length models that would have this. But there's no way this will be generic, right? Just on reasonable physics grounds, but that won't be stable.
Why? Yeah, why? I mean, why
exponential bit.
Well, the NBL phases are already highly non-generic, so...
No, it is highly generic. No, that's the point, right? Well, it is extremely generic. It's extremely robust to anything. That's kind of the nice thing, right?
It's the missing part, and your reasoning is exactly this last thing. Why is this kind of not stable?
Okay, so I need...
Why is
okay.
It not stable?
I need a physics argument for why to say I don't like this. So this, I mean, one way you can see this is that won't be stable to thermalization. So that's, like, the way you construct many-body localization, if you think of it as Anderson localization in Fock space, this will give you many, many, you know, zero denominators, and I won't be able to proceed and have many body localization. Just on physics ground, it sounds like, you know, any, if you have something exponentially degenerate, you would think that any generic, you know, perturbation will lift, any quantum fluctuation will lift those degeneracies, right? Or if you can construct a model that has generically this, I would, okay, let me put it this way. So we take this as an assumption. I would say this is on physics grounds, I don't see how you could have this generically. And certainly you won't have many body localization with something like that. So let me put it this way. I wouldn't know how many body localization would work if you had exponentially degenerate eigenstates. The way you just construct if you want many body localization. Yes?
So this global symmetry to local symmetry, effective symmetry, do you mean in a sense of local as in gauge symmetry, gauge redundancy? Because if so, then this could be like a manifestation of it, like Elitzer theorem, where you...
Well, I mean, there you can break it, right? Like, I mean, for example, for the XXZ chain I was talking about, you can break this symmetry. So I don't know if it's really, it's not really like a gauge redundancy. It's more like an actual symmetry, and you can break it still.
Well, it's a question of what you consider physical degrees of freedom or what not, physical observable or not. So I don't mean it in that sense. What I mean is that you can make what used to be global transformation.
Right.
You can make transformations locally, in independently on each side.
Yes, that's what happens. Yes, that's right. Yeah. I don't know if there's an obvious relation to the gauge theory language, but yeah, that sounds interesting. I never thought about this too deeply, but yeah, I'd be happy to chat more. Yes.
Yeah, so does that argument also applies to non-abelian topological order?
Yes, it does in some way, but okay, I don't necessarily want to go there, but yeah. We have some argument that we argued that non-abelian topological order cannot be many-body localized for similar reasons. But again, this relies on this L-bit picture. In principle, I would think you can have non-ergodic phases with non-abelian topological order. They just won't have that strict definition of many-body localization. So they will most likely have, like, I mean, the reason, for example, in 1D, if you take those chains of anions that Sid mentioned yesterday, they're already not exactly many-body localized. They have this log L entanglement. They look more critical. So I would think something similar will happen in 2D. Yeah. So if you want to consider this log L entanglement as still many-body localization, yes, maybe. They could be many-body localized. If you want to consider some strict area law many-body localization, no, they cannot be.
Well, I guess I'm thinking about another context where you just take a Levenwood model and make random coefficients for each term. It's still commuting, and it fits into the L-bit picture.
But then you want to add perturbations, right?
Right,
so we're actually thinking about the Levenwood model, but as once you go in the high energy density, you know, generic anions will have like generic eigenstates will have like a finite density of anions, even if you localize them, and then you have to choose like a fusion tree.
That's right.
And then you have all sorts of problems that I guess Andreas and collaborators encountered in the past. And it's not clear whether these will actually thermalize or whether you can get something non-trivial out of them.
Okay, let's.
Thank you.